You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hi, I'm Chanti.
And I'm Lynx, and you're listening to Muses.
Enjoy the show. Welcome to Muses, the podcast that explores the often overlooked stories and contributions of women in music history. I'm Chanti.
And I'm Lynx. Today, we've come together for a very special occasion, and that's to mark what would have been Jimi Hendrix's 78th birthday on November 27th.
This year, on November 27th, Kiss the Sky will be playing an upcoming live stream to honor Jimmy's birthday. It will air on Facebook and other platforms. Leading up to this special event, we had a conversation with Rosalie Brooks and Greg Wright.
Rosalie Brooks locked eyes with Jimi Hendrix on New Year's in 1963, and it was love at first sight. Cosmically connected, the two went on to write and record My Diary and UT together, forming both a romantic and musical partnership. Rosie began singing at the age of 2, and thankfully she hasn't stopped. Mentored by Etta James, she brought everything full circle later on when she'd invite musicians into her home and inspire them.
I heard that she even had Jimmy Blue and Kiss the Sky over to her house. She cooked them an amazing meal while they rehearsed at her place and jammed with her band.
Speaking of her band, let's talk about Greg Wright, who joined us in his studio. He is, hands down, one of the most talented and innovative guitar players out there, and we can't wait for his new album, Big Dog Bargain, to be released in early 2021.
You can really feel the chemistry between Rosa and Greg, and I can't wait to see them perform live together. Greg has worked with many of the greats, including Michael Jackson. In this episode, he actually tells us a hilarious story about when Michael Jackson, told him to show off his stuff in front of Eddie Van Halen.
This episode has it all. Amazing stories of rock and roll past, honoring the present, and being hopeful and optimistic for the future. We hope you enjoy it.
We are so grateful to Rosa and Greg for this conversation. You can find Rosa on Facebook and at rosaliebrooks.com. You can find Greg online as well, gregwright.com, and that's Greg with 2 G's. Don't forget to follow Jimmy Blue and Kiss the Sky and tune in on November 27th to see the band perform live on stream in all their Jimi Hendrix glory. Enjoy the show. Well, welcome, Rosalie Brooks and Greg Wright, to Muses Podcast. We're so happy to have you. And for those who are listening, perhaps on audio only, Greg is in his studio. He's got guitar in hand, so you may hear some wonderful sounds throughout, play some music during, and we're on episode 146, so thank you.
Oh, you've done that, Jeannie?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
My goodness, that's a lot.
It's quite a pleasure to get to hear the music as it's happening, for sure. This is great. Thank you guys so much for being with us.
To be here.
Rosa, we wanted to talk first a little bit about your history and your background. When did your musical career get started? And I read a little bit, it sounds like your family was very musical. I'm just curious how that all came about for you.
Yes, my musical career, I have to say, started when I was about 2 years old.
Wow.
Because at home, my family were, my mother and dad both were singers. Mom had a beautiful first soprano. And my dad, he could sing baritone, tenor, alto. He had all the keys, okay? And they sang in church. But we also had music in our house all the time. Every day, the radio, my mom had records, too, that she would play. And I was a two-year-old, and I remember singing everything that came on the radio word for word, note for note. Wow. And that's my beginning in love music. You know, it was like my house was always filled with music. So I grew up in that environment. And along the way, when I got almost 5 years old, my mom, the church was having a contest for the children. And they were singing, of course. So I sang a song called Yes, Jesus Loves Me. And I won the contest.
Yeah.
I won $100 in a rocking chair, really beautiful, tall back wooden rocking chair. I loved that chair. But I recall after I sang that song, there were shimmering lights dancing on the top of my head. Energy. It was something that had, you know, like a spirit that had me just glowing. And the ladies in the church were saying amen and applauding and yes, Lord, and all that. And I'm here, a little girl just grinning and just taking it all in. And my mother recognized from that point that I wanted to sing. So all of her nurturing and guiding began. And I had to give her, plus my brother, who started playing guitar at 11, and we used to have jams with just me and him at my house. I played the keyboard and sang, and he played guitar. And we'd come home from school, and first thing we'd do was start playing some music. And we'd always create songs, all kind of nutty songs and crazy gimmicky songs, every kind of, you know, crazy song. But anyway, we had fun. We had a ball growing up doing music. And then I went on, because I had my dad, he was a guitar player, and he knew all the blues men back in the day. And they used to come over to our house and jam, you know, people like T-Bone Walker, Pee-Wee Creighton, Smokey Hoggs, even Johnny Guitar Watson.
Wow.
Johnny Guitar Watson was a young brother. And he took an interest in me when I was about 15. That's when he was coming, and he took me on my first blues debut. My parents let me go, and they felt, you know, they trusted that I would be safe with his care. And so we went out to this place called Johnson's Ranch, way out in Paris, California. And that's when I sang Aretha Franklin's song called Today I Sang the Blues. And the people just loved it. They were, you know, again, that applause and all that beautiful energy that was just engulfing me. And I just kept going. I've been going ever since. I'm 77 now. And I just feel good. You know, I love to sing, and I look forward to when this plandemic is over so that we can get back doing what we love.
Yeah, there's nothing like being in like a live music experience. I miss going to concerts so much as well. It's just the energy. It is like going to church.
Yes, it's amazing. Yeah. You know, it's like all the things that you want to feel is right there.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Who were some of your greatest influences and mentors?
Well, I just named one of them. That was Johnny Guitar Watson, who took me as a teenager to do different things musically and supported me and had all this confidence. He was like a big papa or somebody to me. He wasn't that much older than I was, but he still, like, he was a big brother to me. And then, of course, when I was about six or seven years old, Miss Etta James was my mentor. She used to live in a house near my house, a couple of doors away. And her and the guy, Richard Berry, who had a few hits out, Louie Louie was one of them. And Pretty Girls was another one. But they had some songs that they put out together, Etta James and Richard Berry. One of them was called, Annie Had a Baby. And Work With Me Henry. Those were some of the old blues songs that they put out early on. But as a child, I was able to sit on her porch while they created and put all this music together and did what they were doing musically. And she would always tell me, you can stay as long as you guys be quiet, you know. So we were quiet because we loved what we were involved in and engaged in at the time. And that was the best place. That was the best seat in the house right there on the porch, you know, to hear them. And she was the best, definitely, when I was around 15, she gifted me with that album that had over 20 different songs on it called At Last.
Yeah.
That album had like Sunday Kind of Love, My Dearest Darling, At Last. Shoot. Gosh, I can't even name all the songs. It was like everything on there was a hit. But it was like, I say, about 20 songs. And I, on the weekends, I had my own stereo in my bedroom, and I used to put that album on in heavy rotation, play one side, flip it over, play the other side, and flip it back. Because that's how, you know, and I didn't realize at the time that I was being, you know, I was learning. I was learning how to phrase. I was learning everything about singing from my mentor. Mm-hmm. Because today people tell me, you remind me of Etta James when you sing. And I didn't know that all that listening that I was doing was you know, just
soaking it in.
Soaking it all in, yeah.
And just at your house, too, with all these musical geniuses around.
Oh, man. You know what? It's been a blessing to live in L.A., and in the neighborhoods that I've lived in, because I was around people like the Platters, the Coasters, the Flares, James Brown and the Famous Flames when he before became the other name that he came, Hank Ballard and the Midnighters, the Penguins, remember a song called Earth Angel? They put out that song way back in the day. And all of these people were coming up like flowers in the neighborhood. Our community was loaded with talent. As you know, and still today it's the same way. You know, there's so many people are influenced. I've had ever since I lived in the house that I live now, which is over 50 years, I've had jams, and tell you, there have been many, many young people in the neighborhood who have been influenced by what they hear coming out of my house. So it's like we're passing it on generation after generation, you know, because I had it when I was a kid. You know, I was around the corner from one of the most famous nightclubs in L.A. called the 5-4 Ballroom. And they had top-of-the-line artists like Ike and Tina Turner, Billy Eckstein, Arthur Prysock, James Brown and the Famous Flames again. And, oh, the list goes on and on. Mongo Santa Maria, when he was all into the Latin rhythms and stuff. Al Jader. Those people were all fixtures in the neighborhood that I lived in that playing at that club. So, you know, all those things that I was able to, music is medicine, is food, it's healing, it's everything. Some people run from it, and some people embrace it. And I'm of that group. You know, I embrace it totally.
Yeah,
I live dream music. You know, that's what I do.
You've really brought it full circle.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
You're gonna, everybody say, when you gonna retire? When you gonna stop? I tell them I'll keep on rolling till the wheels fall off.
That's what's so great about music too. It's like, what do you mean retire? It's not like a physical type of job. Like, it's always going to be in you. It's in you for life, you know?
Right.
What a magical time to grow up. I can't even imagine being around those people and seeing everyone and
they all became legends.
Yeah, all of them. It's
And then here's the other part that's amazing. Later on, as I continued on my career path, Hosea Wilson of Motown was the one who, when I was like 18, he took me to different places to go and debut and sing and all that. And he became world famous with the Motown operation. But in the meantime, I kept going. I got into some groups and stuff. Like early on in 63, actually, I got into this all-female group called The Ribbons. And I wasn't the original lead singer. She passed away. But they replaced her with me. And so we were like, working, just hitting we had all types of engagements. I mean, wonderful stuff happening. Even the Dick Clark Show happened for us.
Nice.
And we had 3 chart hits out at the time.
Wow.
And they're all on, you can look them up. But we were doing our thing, you know. But what happened with that group, I want to say, she was the lady that was the leader of the group, was a very domineering type of person, controlling and whip cracking person, okay? To the point where, you know, I felt like my freedom was being taken because I've always been free spirit.
Yeah.
I always did what I wanted to do, sing the way I want to sing, and express what I wanted to express. I never had anybody to dictate how I should do anything or any of that, you know. And I developed my own way of, I learned to project, I learned to emphasize, I learned to do everything, improvise. Everything I learned about singing, I learned on my own. And of course, I listened to others. You know, I love Nancy Wilson, Sarah Vaughan, of course, Etta James was my mama. And, you know, I continued to study under my peers, Aretha Franklin, too. That was my girl. So all those things I learned about singing, I just felt like I don't need somebody telling me how to sing.
Yeah.
So we were together for about 8 months, I think. And then the party was over.
Mm-hmm.
The girl that joined the group with me, she and I became a duo. And we went on to try to do a few things. We got hooked up with some producers and did a song called Big City Guy. I don't know whatever happened to that song, but we had fun in the recording studio doing it. And that was all out in Hollywood and stuff. I'm mentioning that because if you're out there, I'm still here.
Okay, pass that message on. Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Greg, I wanted to ask you, how do you feel about sharing a bit of your musical journey, or are you more comfortable playing music today? How much would you like to share about yourself? I didn't ask that ahead of time. Sorry about that.
My experience is very similar to Rosa's in the sense that my dad probably had better, deeper knowledge of music than most musicians, even though he didn't play. And that's it. We just grew up with records and music, and man.
Did you grow up in the LA area as well?
No, I'm an Air Force brat.
All over then, huh?
So. We heard, you know, my dad was bringing home records from overseas, you know, I mean, jazz, blues, rock and roll, soul, and then, I mean, things as far removed as, you know, Bedouin tribesmen chants. I mean, we were just hearing all and I just kind of absorbed it all. So did my brother. My brother did the same thing. He absorbed everything.
Yeah.
Photographic memory, musically.
Wow.
But I picked up guitar when I was about 13, 14, and it was just a hobby because I was really into athletics. I wanted to be a football player or a baseball player or something. And I was really putting all my energy into that. And then one summer night, some friends asked me if I wanted to go to the Hendrix concert. And I said I would go, so I went along and went and promptly got my head blown apart. And I never wanted to play sports ever again. And then I went home and I told my dad. I said, Dad. He said, he asked me, he said, how was the concert, son? And I said, well, football's over. And he said, well, what do you mean? I said, man, I know what I'm going to do with my life. I'm going to play guitar. I'm going to play music. That's what I'm going to do. And I haven't looked back since.
Was he supportive?
Very.
Fantastic.
Very. He was a little taken aback at first, you know. But when he saw that I locked myself in my room and would rehearse or practice every day, all day, he knew I wasn't kidding. And since he was a patron of the arts, he got behind me. He was my biggest supporter, really. Wow.
Our dads are actually our biggest supporters as well.
That's important, you know, because it gives you a little encouragement to push forward, you know. And, you know, all my musician friends, man, their parents are like, you know, musicians, I'm a dozen, and you know, you're going to end up on the streets and all this kind of stuff. And my dad was never like that. He just said, man. He said, you just make sure you're three times a guitar player of anybody you come across.
Nice. Good advice.
And I could say, is it my turn? I want to say.
Oh, yeah.
And he is.
Yeah.
You know, like I was saying, he's like the second coming of Jimmy for me. Because there's nothing of that, you know, like he doesn't play Jimmy note for note, but he could.
Yeah.
If he wanted to. He puts his own flavor on it, which I love. And we do a lot of tributes as well, you know. So when his birthday and his memorials come around, that's why we were okay to want to do yours, because this is something that we love doing. Yeah. And to be able to pay homage to him and honor him and know that the influence that Greg was kicked in high gear from seeing Jimi Hendrix perform that faithful day evening at the, where were you, Greg?
A place called the Baltimore Civic Center in Baltimore, Maryland.
Wow.
I came. Whoever I was when I sat down at first, that guy disappeared in the middle of the show.
Can you play us if it's okay?
And he never came back.
What y'all want to hear, Voodoo Child? We'll be right back. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
No one played like Thanks. Jimmy. Like, what a Whoa. Style he had.
Wow, wow, wow.
And speaking of Jimmy, since we're on the subject, and yes, thank you so much, Greg. That was amazing. Rosa, take us back to New Year's Eve, 1963.
Okay. That was right. As I said, the young lady that was in the Ribbons group with me, we didn't go out Christmas, but we decided we were going to go out for New Year's and bring it in. So there was a popular club that we used to attend called the California Club, right in our community. So we went to bring in the New Year. And Ike and Tina Turner and their 28-man review were performing that evening. Oh, man, what a show they were putting on.
I bet.
We had a table right up front where we could see the whole show. We could all the girls, you know, like we could almost reach out and touch them. That was how close they were, slinging their hair, and they had on all those what do you call those fringe dresses, the shimmy dress.
Nice.
They were wearing those beautiful dresses and, you know, just working it. I mean, that energy was amazing. You want to talk about some energy? You know, I mean, and not only were they energized the whole room.
Yeah.
Where anybody who loved music, who was an artist, who wanted to do, I mean, there you have it. Do that, okay? That's what it was saying to me, you know, that. Yeah. But anyway, while I'm sitting there, I kept feeling like a command or demand or something to tell me to turn around. And so I kept feeling that, something telling me just turn around, you know, like a demand. So I finally turned around. And there was this man that was so handsome, staring at me.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
We were staring, look, we, you know, I can't stare long at anything, especially cats. But anyway, we were staring at each other for so long until I had to turn around and stop, you know, just turn around and turn back around and watch the show because it was too much. So I said, but when I turned around, I said, damn, he was good. He was fine. And so I turned around and I started watching the show again and I forgot all about him. I did. I actually... just, you know, I turned around, we stared at each other, and then I turned back around and started watching the show. And about 10, 15 minutes later, I had to go to the lounge. So when I stood up, I noticed he stood up. He was right against the wall to the back of the exit where I was going to go. And anyway, when I stood up, he stood up. And as I grew nearer to him, you know, he was just standing there. And so when I got close enough, he reached out and grabbed me. Everybody talking about how shy he was. He wasn't shy. But anyway, he wanted me to come join him at his table. He asked, that's what he asked. So I told him I would. And he had to let me go, though, because I had to go. But anyway, when I came back, I got right near where he was sitting, because he was sitting in the last booth up against the wall. And he stood up, when I came, he stood back up and ushered me in to sit down. And then he sat down next to me. And then he flagged over the waitress, getting me a drink. We exchanged our names with each other while the waitress was gone. And he told me his name was James Marshall. And I've always called him James Marshall. Aww. I love that name. But he said, just stay, you know, he was Jimmy. So anyway, I got a little bit of this and a little bit of that, you know. But anyway, that evening turned into... an evening we spent together watching Ike and Tina, getting to know each other. I felt like I had known him all my life.
So special.
Felt a presence, you know, he had a very strong presence and so do I. So we were just two spirits right there together, just building whatever it was we were building, but it turned into a very romantic, spiritual connection. And I always tell people, I believe it was ordained by God because I used to dream about him. I used to see his face in dreams. And like when I was a little young kid in elementary school, every boy that I liked looked like him. So it's like there's a picture of him at his school. And I swear, I had so many crushes on boys that looked just like him. So anyway, like I said, it was ordained as far as I'm concerned. Because like I said, I dreamed about him. I saw him in visions and everything before we ever met. And like, it was like we were related. We were from the same time. We were musically, spiritually, and romantically connected in every way. So we were able to be together that evening. We went to the restaurant, had food, dinner first, and then we went to his place. And the day of the new year, January the 1st, was when our song was born, My Diary.
That's amazing. I didn't realize it was like immediate that you guys were like writing.
Yeah, we was grown, okay? We was doing what grown folks do, okay? No, I mean, you know, that love at first sight, it really happens.
Yeah.
You know, some people believe in it, some people don't. But as I said, I feel like I've known him all my days.
Yeah.
And he's like my mother and here's the real strange part. Jimmy was in the 101st Airborne stationed in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. So was my brother, James, the one who played guitar.
Wow.
How about this? They met before we did.
No way.
Two people from the same family in two different places meet. And become close friends.
Wow.
Jimmy and my brother were like brothers together. Both of them, and it's so strange, both of them was named James. Both of them Sagittarians, and both of them played guitar. How about that?
Wild. Amazing.
And they used to go out. They used to go out on to some of them chiseling circuit spots. And Jimmy went AWOL, as a matter of fact. You know, he had let his hair grow real long. This is a story from my brother. But I didn't know all these things about Jimmy until I took Jimmy over to my brother to meet him, because he had all this equipment over there, so Jimmy wanted to jam. And so we went over, you know, to go jam. And as soon as he opened the door, lo and behold, hey, man! You know, they were all excited with each other. They was, like, surprised to see each other. You mean, you know, and it was, like, so much energy right there between the two of them, seeing each other again in a long time that they hadn't. And they shook hands and embraced and was glad to see each other and talk. And my brother, of course, he was worked for Regal Shoes downtown, and he hadn't really pursued the music. And that's what he was telling Jimmy that went in their conversation, that he was, you know, not doing music. And Jimmy told him that he was traveling with Little Richard's band, part of the Upsetters, one of the guitar players. The Upsetters band, and that they went on. We had a good time playing music that day. It was just so nice, really nice. I used to do a lot of Ike and Tina Turner stuff, you know. So that was it's gonna work out fine. And, it was so many things that I used to do of hers, but we had a ball back in the day. Wow. While he was here.
And those songs that you recorded and that you wrote with Jimmy, what do they mean to you today?
Well, I tell you, and I didn't know, because this is the thing. I knew Jimmy was in trouble over there in Europe, right? And I started having premonitions about him, that he wasn't, his life was in danger. So one day I was right here in my dining room wiping off. I had a glass top table and I was Windexing the table. And they were playing his music on the radio. And I'm just digging it and enjoying all of the stuff that he had done and feeling so proud for him that he had made it. You know, like that's my guy, that he made it. You know, he's doing his thing, you know, and all those songs that they played I enjoyed every one of them. And so at the fourth one, the man, the announcer came in and said, "You've been listening to the late Jimi Hendrix." My knees buckled and I went to the floor. I pulled myself up by the chair and sat down and realized, I said, nobody is ever going to know. Nobody's ever going to know our story. This is the true LA story. Thought I'm sharing with you. He was with me the whole time he was here. There was no Arthur Lee. He didn't write nothing like he claimed. He was a song thief. Hmm. Was a good musician in his own right. He was very talented, but definitely he was not R&B. And definitely, I never heard of a man writing a song about a diary.
Yeah,
it's a girl song. Okay, it's my song. I wrote it. As a matter of fact, Jimmy started the song out. He said, "I know that I will never love again. I know that I will be my only friend." And then I came in with, "But if I could, I'd like for you to see the lovesick image I've turned out to be." And that's how that song began, in Jimmy's hotel room at the Wilcox. So if Arthur Lee wrote anything, he had to be a fly on the wall to do it. And I just want to get that, set the record straight on that, because many people still feel and still believe and still are gullible enough to really think he wrote that song.
Yeah.
And I have always have to tell them, well, I own the copyrights and I hold the master still. So why would I be given a master?
Yeah.
And why would I have the copyrights?
Exactly. Yeah. It's so important too, so, to like, let's not erase women's history and music like that. Like,
absolutely, absolutely. And you know, I see a lot of things. I'm so glad I'm doing this with you today, because I've seen a lot of things going on with his legacy that I don't like, which will be coming forth in my biography that I'm writing.
Good.
Seen the treatment of one group against the other, and how they tried to make him Eurocentric and take away his identity, and he wasn't African American, he had to be an Indian, and that was only to make him more palatable to them, you know, not that he was, you know, we're all 1/16th. I'm 1/16th. Greg is 1/16th. We're all 1/16th Cherokee or Blackfoot or something up in here. So, I mean, but he's an African-American. Mm-hmm. And I have my Jimi Hendrix's brother and I, in 92, when he got his star on the Walk of Fame in Hollywood, I met Leon and we visited, he visited me here at my home. And we came up with Bring Jimmy Black, because he was trying to get home before they took him out. He was trying desperately to get back to his roots. That's why he was working with people like the Aleem Twins and Juma Sultan, and Buddy Miles and Billy Cox, and all the brothers that, you know, that he wanted to work with and do music with. That's where he was trying to go. And another thing about his music is that a lot of lies and myths and rumors had got put out about him not wanting to do R&B music anymore, and him not, you know, wanting to be bothered with playing behind other people and stuff. But when you look at the pictures tell the story. And they tell the truth.
Yeah.
He was having a ball. Okay. And not only that, any musician worth his salt will tell you that his music is rooted in R&B.
Absolutely.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
So all of this claiming and trying to, you know, make him something he's not, or that you try to flip the script on who he was as a musician and all, as a person and in every way possible. But people like Greg and Jimmy Blue and Stan Skibby and so many others that I know that have been influenced by Jimi Hendrix. And they weren't given the same opportunities, of course. The door was closed. Okay. Oh, no, you can't play rock. Hey, well, if Jimmy was rock, okay, what was that? Where did that come from? Came from him. Yeah. And he happened to be an African-American, too. So it's like DNA. Okay, check the DNA out on these brothers, because they bring it naturally. Greg brings it naturally. That's why I love him so much, and that's why I enjoy working with him. We do kind of, we are so eclectic. I want you to see my website. I talk about these things on my website, and the fact that we enjoy and just expand on every creative thing that we can. You know, we take music to all levels. You know, we're not stuck in anything. You know, I won't let you, I have been labeled a blues artist, but I'm an eclectic artist. I do everything.
Yeah.
I might sing "Just Another Day" for you and me in paradise. I might sing anything, you know? So that don't lock me in no box, because I get out.
Yes. Okay.
Since music is a language, if you're true to it, you just speak the language, irrespective of what box you're supposed to belong to, which I always found, just to be, if I may be frank, bullshit.
You
know?
Mm-hmm. You may be. Yes, you may.
You know, the greatest freedom I've ever had as an artist is not being associated with a major record label.
Yeah.
I was associated with three major record deals here in LA under my own name. And each time, the bigger the label got, the more miserable the experience was. And finally, after the last record I did for a major label that shall remain nameless, but has the initials WB.
Oh, great.
Okay. Yeah, it stands for Wretched Bastards. Anyway, I just decided, man, I'm not bleeding all over the floor for these damn people anymore, because A, they don't respect what I do. B, they don't understand what I do. And I never wanted to be a quote unquote rock and roll star or any of that. You know, what is that? That's up there with Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. It's like, yeah, just some mythical cartoon character, you know. What do I do?
Like the wizard.
Yeah, what's a rock star do? I throw TVs out the window for a living, you know.
Yeah.
No, I'm a craftsman. That's what I do. I'm involved wholeheartedly, my complete being, in the craft of making music. And that means blues, rock and roll, jazz, R&B, hell, even country and western if the situation calls for it. You know, so I've been much happier and much more complete just sticking to my guns. And I don't
like that free spirit thing, you know. You can't have people telling you what to do or who you are. Only you know that.
Exactly. And I kind of always frightened Hollywood, because I could look them square in the eye and say, I don't want shit you have.
Yeah.
There's nothing you have that's going to corrupt me.
Or there's Nothing scarier when they can't buy you.
Yeah, and they can't. They never could. They never could, you know. And by following my instinct, I've had a much greater career than anybody could ever want.
Yeah. So. That's great advice for people to follow, too. Just always.
Yeah, just be strong. Stand up to them because they're just a mirage. I always think of the Toto moment in The Wizard of Oz. Right? You pull the curtain away and it's some frightened little asshole going, never mind that man behind the curtain. You know, that's who they are.
Exactly.
That's who they are. Exactly. You know, but when the curtain's drawn, you know, they have this big, powerful voice. You know, you got to do this for your career. Man, yeah. Who are you?
Yeah, yeah. Like today. You got to get naked. You got to be vulgar. You got to be explicit with trash. And all we have, you've redirected our music to become nothing but trash. You love selling and making money off trash. All of the good stuff that we do, like Greg and myself, Greg's got a hell of an album that's coming out. Do we have time for him to just play a little bit of it?
Yes, we do. Yeah, and then we'll ask you a couple of questions about the upcoming show with Jimmy Bia. Right. And so those are the last things we have to go. So we'll hear a song, couple more questions, if that's okay with you.
Yes, ma'am.
And then
all day. I'm ready. I'm willing and I'm able. Okay.
Great. I'm watching a beautiful sunset just awesome. Beyond my computer. And I just go, I can't believe I get to do this.
Able to talk to you because there's been Greg and I and the band that I have, the guys that work with us, they are phenomenal. Every last one of them, I love them like brothers. You know, I come from a family with four brothers. They always treated me, they let me rule them. I was the little princess. Now they treat me like the queen, okay? But anyway, these guys do the same thing. They let me rule them. I don't try to rule them too hard because I respect them as men and I want them to be free spirits like I'm a free spirit and I'm not going to try to take anything away from them. I'll give them, but I'll never take. So that's who I am. And we are a force to be reckoned with. The Brooks Project, we are a resident downtown LA at a place called the 7 Grand. We're going in, and when the new year comes, 2021 comes, we'll be back hopefully because they got all this pandemic all gone. Yeah. But we have been 5 years down there now.
Wow.
We're residents that we play and people come down and get fed spiritually, musically, and otherwise, you know, because we give it to them, you know, like, and Greg is a talent in his own right. And together, we are forced to be reckoned with. And I promise you, listen to what he's got to say. You ready, babe?
Yeah, I'm going to play this little song the song is called Have You Ever Seen the Wind?
Yes, all right.
And what that's alluding to is, you know, I'm not a religious guy, but I am a spiritual guy. And it's just addressing how certain people only believe what they can see. But there is massive, colossal spiritual and universal power in things that we can't see. And I use the wind as an example. Nobody on this earth has ever seen the wind. Mm-hmm. But you've seen what it does.
Yeah,
it can make 100-foot waves in the open ocean. It can over time it can shape complete mountain ranges, or it can rip the roof off your house. Whatever you you know. So that's all. I'm just asking. Have you ever seen the wind? So let me know if you can hear this, okay? And if you can't, I'll make an adjustment.
with a friend of mine who told me he don't believe in anything he can't see. So I asked him if he'd ever noticed a tree swaying in the breeze, swaying in the breeze. The mighty ocean tides, majestic mountainside, shaped and formed by the wind. Just because we can't see a certain thing don't mean it ain't there. Don't mean it ain't. So have you ever seen the wind, or seen the thunder through the rain? Just because we can't see, don't mean that it ain't real. Have you ever seen the wind?
Wow.
I would like to pre-order the album.
All right. Hey, all right. Kay. Beautiful.
So I'll have that. I'll put that on my record player any day.
Did we mention the fact that Greg has been very, very... how can I say this? He's done some great things in his life musically and played with some really great, phenomenal people. I don't know if any of that got mentioned before, but people like Mick Fleetwood, wow. Michael Jackson playing on the stage on the tour, the Victory Tour with Van Halen and Greg on stage together.
I saw that.
Ripping that up, okay? I just want y'all to know that this man is overqualified on guitar. He ain't no joke, wow. Okay? Never.
I saw that online, and truly it is an honor to be speaking and in the presence of both of you. So thank you so much again.
I just want to know, yes, who the hell booked us to play in Toronto in November?
It was freezing. And,
what that old? I think it was called Exhibition Stadium. That old
stadium.
It was outdoors in that park.
Yeah, man. You don't want an outdoor one right
no,
now.
No, man, that was rough. I mean, you know, I was usually pretty on top of my appearance, you know, because you know it's show business. So you kind of got to represent.
Mm-hmm.
And we got out there, and that water was blowing off that Lake Ontario. That wind was blowing off that Lake Ontario, like. And I remember my strings feeling like icicles, and my fingers went numb immediately. And it was so cold that I put on thermal underwear over my costume. I didn't.
That's what Canadians do.
But anyhow.
Rosa, you mentioned Jimmy Bleu. Oh, sorry, I'm French. Jimmy Bleu.
Yes, I love him. I love him so much. That is my guy. I had a chance to see his show. He came here in 2016, and they did a thing at the Whiskey.
Yes.
And that's the one you missed, Greg. I was trying to get Greg to come be with us, but he couldn't make it on that time. But that show was something out of, oh my God, you know, like phenomenal. It was a great show. What he does with two different, you know, he plays half of it is with the experience and half of it is with the band of gypsies, and each one of them take you there. Each performance with both elements were on point. And every tune he played, every move he made in the band, they looked the part. Those guys, they look great up there. I mean, and I'm so proud of him because he's got a hell of a show, you know, and I hope that he continues as long as he can to do it, you know, because he's got a really wonderful, you know, unlike some of, you know, I've over time, I've met a lot of cats that do Hendrix tributes and stuff, but he's got an A1 show.
I saw a photo of you, I believe it was at that show, front of the stage, just smiling ear to ear.
Well, let me tell you about that picture that's standing in front of the stage like that, looking up at Jimmy Bleu. That is deja vu for me, because that's the way, the same corner and the same look, looking up at the stage at Jimi Hendrix himself performing. That's what that took me to, because it was like I said, deja vu. The first time I ever saw Jimi Hendrix, he was with the Little Richard's band, and they were doing a thing out of this place called the Golden Bear. And I got him, I did his hair, I gave him a blouse of mine to wear. That's how he started wearing women's blouses, because of me.
Of course.
And
there
I gave
go.
A white I gave him a white puffy sleeve blouse with pointed collar, and they had cufflinks on it too. But I gave him that white blouse and a little black bolero with some stamped roses with green leaves on them, velvet. And I did his hair, and he would let me comb the curls out because he didn't want them to, he wanted them locked in first. And he said, "I'll comb it out later. Let's not comb it out right now." But anyway, he told me, and he, "I'm gonna show you something tonight." Boy, did he ever! Everybody was standing with their mouths dropped when he stepped out on that corner of that stage, like Jimmy Bleu was standing on that picture, and he started playing with his teeth behind his back, between his legs. He had rubbed it up against the microphone stand, and he was doing all the stops. He pulled out all the stops. But guess what? He got in the world of trouble after the show, because Little Richard had him at a beating. You know, we couldn't even leave because we had to wait on him to get his ass chewed. Okay. Because he was asking him, what you doing wearing them clothes? I'm the star here. You don't be upstaging me. You know, and I'm going to fine you for that. He was fining $5 for wearing the clothes. And, you know, he put on a hell of a performance that night. Like I said, everybody was standing there with their jaws dropped. Just couldn't believe what they had witnessed.
You see, Michael Jackson was a much better band leader than Little Richard.
he
was intimidated by nobody.
Yeah.
And it's almost like when you stood on stage next to him, it was almost like stepping into a fatal laser light. You know? And he encouraged you to dress. He encouraged you to be outrageous. Man, one night he came up to me and he said, Eddie, he said, I need to talk to you for a minute. I said, okay, fine. He said, Eddie's coming tonight. I said, Eddie, who? He said, Van Halen. I said, oh, really? Cool. So I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm going to get a chance to see this cat up close because I'm always interested in guitar players and what they do, their methods. And Michael looked at me with this sort of deadly serious look, and he goes, I want you to do everything. I said, what do you mean? I want you to go crazy. Yeah, man. I want you to do all that stuff you do, you know, playing the guitar behind your head and playing the guitar with your teeth and the splits and all this crazy stuff. He said, I want you to do it. I just, and, you know, he wasn't doing it from a malicious place. He just felt like that was just going to help make a great show. That was always his aim, to have a great show. And I went out there and did all that stuff, but I don't think Edward appreciated it. I think he felt like I was trying to make a reputation at his expense, but I wasn't. I was just doing what my employer asked me to do.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
How can you say no?
No, you can't say no to that guy.
How could you have
said
no?
Can't say no to that guy.
Uh-huh. So this is an ingredient that Michael had and we have, because Greg and I work as a team and we, you know, work off of each other. You know, it's like, do your thing to the utmost. I'm looking for it. I want it. I want you to do it every step of the way, and vice versa. He encourages me in the same way. And we do our best work. I think we do our best work together. I'm just so very proud to have him as a partner to work with. And I'd love to share a stage with him anytime.
That's amazing. Before we let you guys go, we just want to mention that November 27th, Kiss the Sky is playing an upcoming live stream in honor of Jimmy's birthday. It's going to be on Facebook, other platforms.
I've already got it.
Is there anything you'd like to speak on about that or in reflection of Jimmy's 78th?
Yeah, well, our birthdays, we were the same age for a couple of months. Like right now, he's still 77. And at the end of, on the 27th, he'll be 78. That's how close our birthdays are. And actually, like in the song My Diary, we discovered that our birthdays are on the same day. Every year. Look at it. October 16th. November 27 always falls on the same day.
Wow.
Isn't that something? That is very, I'm saying there's a lot of ironies, a lot of firsts. First time he ever went in the studio was with me. I made that possible. I made that happen. I knew the person that was the producer and took us in and recorded. We approached him at the California Club one night when we were just hanging out, and we told him we had a song. He said he'd love to hear it, and that's how we got recorded. You know, that whole recording session happened because we went one, I guess it was Blue Monday or something like that, and he asked us to, can we come over to his place Wednesday to let him hear it. So Jimmy and I went over with his guitar on his back, and we went over to his place, and his wife and another guy was there. They had one of those ranch style kitchens, you know, with the bar where you could sit at the bar, at the counter, I mean. And so we performed the song. They loved it. And then they asked, did we know any more musicians or singers? And at the time we were hanging out with Major Lance was in town for the new year. And his band, because we hung out and partied with them, they played at Ciro's in Hollywood. So we hung out with the band members because Jimmy had no problem going backstage, introducing himself to, you know, guests and getting to know people. So we got invited to party with him after the show. So we got a chance to meet Big Francis. He was a drummer and Alton was the bass player. So when this thing came up and we was hanging out with them, you know, because they didn't have transportation. They were living at the Franklin Hotel on Yucca in Hollywood. I used to, you know, me and Jimmy used to go over there, go get food, and we came come back and hang out with them or take them places and, you know, show them Hollywood and Sunset, take a drive and, you know, just do a lot of fun things together. So when the session came about, we asked them to do the session with us, and they had no trouble, no charge. They were glad to do it.
Wow.
Would you like to end this by giving us a little bit of My Diary?
I appreciate it. All you guys, thank y'all so much. This has been a pleasure to share this time with you and be able to talk about a subject that I love talking about.
I feel like there's so much more Fantastic. We could talk about too, but maybe another time we can get together.
Yeah, we can do a yes. follow-up, but let me just say, in parting, to the folks out there in Facebook land, and I'm on Facebook if you want to look me up on there, but I also have a website, rosaliebrooks.com/, and you'll get me.
Perfect. We will add that to our notes. Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you would like to mention before we say goodbye?
GregWright.com. And it's Greg with 2 G's.
Perfect. And we'll add that in as well. Rosa, I cannot wait to read your book and really read everything about your life. That is what my dreams are made of. So keep going.
Well, keep on following your dreams and making them happen. That's all anybody can do. That's why we're here. We all have been given gifts of various kinds, and we need to put them to good use. Don't just sit on them and ignore them or let them go dormant. You need to act every day and keep on finding your niche and keep on doing, just like you guys got this wonderful show that you're doing here. You know, just keep that up. I love it. You know, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
Thank you both so much for spending an afternoon with us. This has been great.
Muses is produced by Chantal Lemieux and Lynx O'Leary and is part of the Pantheon family of podcasts. Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at pantheonpodcasts.com. All songs can be found wherever you get your music. Please download and purchase these great and important tracks. Come find us at Pantheon Podcasts on Facebook, tweet us at Pantheon Pods, or see us at R&R Archaeology on Instagram.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.